You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome to it. It is Thursday. It is 10, 11, 12. For some reason, we like those kind of things. It's also International Girls Day and National Coming Out Day. So let me invite you now, if there's something you want to invite, announce to the world, today's your day to do it. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman today. And yes, it is National Coming Out Day. So if you want to, well, you know the number, right? Of course, it's 866-987-THOM, and we'll put your calls to the head of the line if you want to participate in National Coming Out Day. All right. But it is also the day of the big vice presidential debate, the one and only matchup between Vice President Joe Biden and the vice presidential wannabe Paul Ryan, also today known as the P90X pinup boy. Yeah, did you see the pictures from Time? Good timing on that, so to speak. But we're going to start off today with our buddy, everybody's buddy from The Nation. He is the Washington correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols. Hey there.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Nicole.
Always great to be with you. No matter where I am, there you are. And it's always good to hear from you. And it's especially good to talk with you today, of course, because Paul Ryan, vying to be the next VP of The Nation, is a seven-term congressman from Wisconsin, yes?
He sure is. He represents my mom.
Ooh.
And, yeah, his district, the first congressional district, stretches right along the Illinois border from Lake Michigan to the center of the state. It goes through a lot of farm country and small towns and mid-sized manufacturing cities. It's a swing district that used to elect Democrats and very possibly will again. But Ryan has held it since 1998.
Wow. You know, the interesting thing is a lot, except for we political junkies who pay attention, and we've known who Paul Ryan is for quite a while now, most of the nation got their first glimpse of him at the Republican National Convention here in Tampa. You know, the thing is, he lied his way through that entire speech, and unless the people watching read an independent outlet such as The Nation or listen to Tom's show or my show at RadioOrNot.com, they're not aware that he lied his way through that entire speech. But, boy, that's when he got the name Lion Ryan, isn't it?
It sure is. And it was really a shock to a lot of folks because Ryan had, during his congressional career, been a very inconsistent player, somebody who said one thing and voted another way. All the time. That was very, very common. So it would be silly to suggest that he had a reputation for integrity. However, he had become known as a guy who spoke blunt truths, supposedly. Somebody who would, you know, be very, very open about his views as regards budget deficits and how to deal with debt, things of that nature. And yet, in his speech, he fuzzed even his own core stance on issues. He made it difficult to know where he stood. And when he got into some fundamental stuff, things that were factual that you couldn't really, you know, you couldn't fuzz, he just lied.
Yeah.
There's simply no question, and there's no other way to say it. He spoke about his hometown of Janesville, which is an auto manufacturing mm-hmm. town. Janesville had a huge General Motors plant, and he clearly suggested in his speech that that plant closed because of policies and actions by President Obama. But that was a lie. The plant had closed in December of 2008 when George Bush was still president. The plans to close it had been announced in the spring of 2008,
right,
long before the election. And so Ryan knew this. There's no doubt. There's no way that he couldn't have known it. He had even been called out on the issue before. And yet he went ahead with it. And I think we have to accept that he is a postmodern politician. He's one of these folks who really does believe you can tell a lie, tell it again, and eventually, at some point, people will stop trying to correct you and your lie will become reality.
Is that
what
we're calling
the politics he works on?
Is that what we're calling it now? Postmodern? You know,
like
the Republican strategy of lying? Post-truth.
Post-truth.
Ah, post-truth. Well, it is post-truth, right. And the truth doesn't matter to them. It is absolutely stunning. The inconsistencies as well. You've got a piece up this morning at The Nation called Debate Question for Paul Ryan. Which of myth's many sides are you on? And you transcribed the exchange between Paul Ryan and Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday a couple of weeks ago, in which Wallace asks, you know, what's the most important thing in his tax reform plan? And Paul Ryan said keeping the rates down. And he talked about, you know, lowering taxes on 20% of the people across the board, and that's the most important thing, more important than creating jobs, more important than renewing manufacturing, more important than maintaining Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, more important than reducing deficits, addressing debts, more important than anything. However, in their debate last week, Mitt Romney said that he's not, you know, gonna lower taxes on the wealthy. Now, is Joe Biden going to be able to call Paul Ryan on this tonight?
Well, I mean, there's little doubt that last week President Obama, who's an imperfect figure, I mean, I'm not trying to make him out to be a perfect guy, but he was. I genuinely believe he was in shock that somebody would go on national television and lie about so many things. And I think it took him a long time to kind of catch up with that reality. It resulted in a disappointing debate performance. But there's no doubt that two things are going to be different tonight. First off, we had the experience of the week that has passed. There's no question whatsoever that Joe Biden knows that a failure to counter lies, deceptions, half-truths in the course of the debate is very, very damaging, very, very dangerous. Mm-hmm. The way debates are played in America, for better or worse, is a lot like a football game. You don't get to win the game in the analysis afterwards. You have to do it on the field. And so people expect the other candidate on the stage to counter, to challenge, to push back. And Biden knows that. I think he fully recognizes that there wasn't enough pushback in the last debate, and he's going to have to do it. So that's the first thing. It's just a circumstantial reality. He has no choice. But there is a second reality here, and that is the simple fact of Joe Biden. He is a very different kind of politician than Barack Obama, mm-hmm. and frankly, Mitt Romney or Paul Ryan. Joe Biden is a scrappy, you know, street politician. People need to understand, unlike these other three players, and it's just simple reality. Obama, Romney, and Ryan all came up easy politically. They, you know, they had their setbacks occasionally, but by and large, they came up on the easy side of politics. That's not the case for Joe Biden.
Right.
Joe Biden grew up lower middle class, working class, came out of Scranton, Pennsylvania, moved down to Wilmington, really started in, you know, neighborhood politics as a county elected official. Took on hard races that nobody thought he'd have a chance in, ran for president a couple times and got beat. I mean, mm-hmm. these are things that make you into a tougher, stronger political player. And I would both expect and frankly, for the sake of debate quality, hope that side of him comes out. The guy who, you know, has had it tough. He hasn't always, you know, had things handed to him.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't going to let this get grabbed away from him in the course of a debate.
Yeah, I don't think so. First of all, in those two runs for the presidency in the primaries, Joe Biden was always a formidable debater. He's always been pretty good.
Debater.
And he's scrappy.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to speak his mind. And he's got a good sense of humor, too. He's likable. He's like Uncle Joe, you know. So we'll see. John Nichols of The Nation, it is always a pleasure. Follow John on Twitter, at Nichols Uprising. And I look forward to talking to you next time. I'm Nicole Sandler, in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back with your calls next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know the number, right? 866-987-THOM. That's 866-987-8466. I'm Nicole Sandler. I look forward to taking your calls next.
A right-wing tool with not much of a mind. This one comes out from the one-term gov.
A little parody from Rocky Mountain Mike there. This one comes from the one-term gov. I'm sure, talking about Mitt Romney's tenure as governor of Massachusetts for one term. And let me ask, how does that qualify him to be president? Just asking, just food for thought. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman today, and we do have a busy show. Coming up a little later this hour, we're going to speak to a friend of mine. His name is Joel Silberman, and he's a media strategist in that he trains public figures for debates, for appearing on television, for doing interviews, and we'll get his advice for Joe Biden for tonight. We'll also ask what Barack Obama did wrong and what he can do to fix that the next time out. But now it's your turn. Let's go to the phones at 866-987-TOM. We'll start with Daryl of Neely, Nebraska, listening on Sirius. Hi, Daryl.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
As I told the call screener, I just want to thank the progressives for a week of absolute entertainment. After the debate, the silly excuses they come up with for the president's performance were just laughable. I just enjoyed the heck out of it. From anywhere from high altitude to Romney being a bully, although President Obama spoke 5 minutes more.
Yeah.
And now the liar, pants on fire one, and now you...
Well, because you know what? I'm with you on the other ones. The altitude, I thought that was ridiculous. I don't know that Romney was necessarily a bully, but he did lie. You can't say he didn't lie. He lied about everything.
How do you know he lied?
He lied about everything. His whole plan, this whole campaign.
Everything.
Excuse me, sir. Yeah, everything. Pretty much everything out of his mouth was a blatant lie. His whole plan all along, and he said it, 20% tax cuts across the board. And then when he's called on it at the debate, he said, oh, no, I'm not going to lower taxes on the wealthiest. Really? Who are you going to believe,
well,
you know, him or your lying eyes?
I think I'll believe the guy when I heard it right from his lips. Why would I believe you?
All right.
I know where you stand on it.
Yeah, so you'll believe the lies. All right, moving on. I don't have time for that. The guy lied. In fact, Shane, I sent you some audio. Did I send you the? I'm trying to remember what clips I sent you, and of course I don't have the list in front of me. Do you have one of Mitt Romney where he was saying that he's looking for a 20% tax cut across the board? No, do I? Oh, I have Paul Ryan saying that, don't I? I didn't send you any clips. Oh, my goodness. Oh, no. Via email, I didn't send you any clips? Okay. I guess they're probably still sitting on my computer at home. All right. Never mind. all right. Let's go back to the phones. Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, listening on WWRL. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nicole. I hope somebody from the Biden-Obama campaign is listening, because in my humble opinion, Joe Biden has to not just tie Ryan or do as well as Ryan, he has to rhetorically demolish Ryan, tear him rhetorically limb from limb.
Yeah.
And that means actually calling out Ryan's own particular lies, specifically that one about the GM plant in Wisconsin.
Right.
But more broadly, he has to hold Ryan accountable for the lies of Mitt Romney in the last debate. Words to the effect of, now, Ryan, I know that you weren't, Paul, I know that you weren't there last week and you're not directly responsible, but right now I've got an audience of maybe 50, 60 million people watching who don't follow politics regularly, and I just want to say to them that virtually everything that your man said Romney said last week was nonsense, and that Obama, he has to basically make an apologia for Obama and say that he was completely, and be honest, shell-shocked by the sheer number and quantity and frequency of the lies, and make the case that this is not good enough. It's not going to be allowed to stand in America. And he can do this without being mean or rotten or non-presidential or negative. Just make a strong affirmative case, that some words to the effect of, I love this country too much to let it be taken over by flim-flam con artists who are flip-flopping around saying anything necessary to people who don't pay that much attention. You know, you follow what I'm saying?
I follow exactly what you're saying. And, you know, I'm more than a little bummed out by that last call. Because if he wasn't such a jerk, and I'm sorry, I know Tom doesn't like to speak ill of previous callers because they're not here to defend themselves. But let me just say, this guy came at me with, I know what you guys think. Well, you know what? This whole campaign is the I know you are, but what am I campaign. They use classic projection. The things that they do, they accuse the Democrats of doing. And
absolutely.
It's uglier than I can remember, right?
If I were in Obama's shoes now, because to be honest with you, up to last week's debate, they had a chance at a sweep of taking back the House, increasing the lead in the Senate.
I know.
This should have been a complete sweep. But what we have now, we'll be happy just to get Obama elected. And I think the only way to get back to where we were is for Obama and Biden to just pull out all the stops, speak directly from the heart, say exactly what they think, the way you or I would, and to hell with conventional politics. Stop worrying about looking like the angry black man. Stop worrying about looking like a bully. I would even say to Romney and Ryan, I challenge you from here to the end of the election for the next 26 days, whatever it is, to have a joint news conference wherever you are in the country from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. for 2 hours, nonstop, every single morning, a joint news conference where we both answer the same questions from the press over and over and over and make them go into detail about everything.
Right. Well, good luck with that. That's not going to happen. But, Nick, thank you for the call. I do agree that you know, Joe Biden should issue the challenge. Can you just get through the next 90 minutes without telling a lie? You know, and call him on it every time he lies. And you know he will, because this is his M.O. at this point. Call him on it. And when I talk about the I know you are, but what am I thing, this is their strategy. You might remember that the Romney campaign sort of telegraphed this. In fact, Mitt Romney said on the 60 Minutes interview, I think it was, you know, I might be tempted to pull out Ronald Reagan's line, there you go again. Well, I'll tell you what, Joe Biden, I think, maybe should pull that out when Paul Ryan starts his Lion Ryan tonight. Say, there you go again. I think it could work for Biden. It wouldn't work for Romney, but it could work for Biden. And it would work for Biden because Ryan lies and Obama isn't. All right, I'm Nicole Sandler, in for Tom Hartman, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
In fact, on the other side of the break, we'll talk with my buddy Joel Silberman, who is a media trainer. He teaches candidates how to prepare for debates, how to appear before the TV.
Senator Biden will play the attack dog. He will play the attack dog for this ticket.
That's because he's still that scrappy kid from Scranton.
Joe Biden.
Oh, I hope Joe Biden will not be doing any kung fu tonight. However, you know, Paul Ryan, if all else fails, might rip open the shirt and show off that P90X or whatever it's called bod that we've seen today in the pictures from Time magazine. I'm still stunned over the timing of those pictures, but anything for, I guess, news mentions. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman today. Thrilled to be here. I'm very happy to welcome my friend Joel Silberman to the line. Now, Joel is a very well-known, very well-respected media strategist and trainer. He's the kind of person who is usually a bit behind the scenes, following behind candidates and public figures, helping them put their best face forward. I guess that's a good way to describe what you do, isn't it, Joel?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you again.
It's always great to talk with you. And as I know you're here, I'm actually sitting on my hands trying to look into the green dot, because I have taken a couple of little training courses with you. And I know that the most important thing when you're on TV is to sit still. And, you know, I'm a radio person. I'm not used to the camera, but Tom's show is on Free Speech TV. And I think I move around too much. So I probably need a refresher course from you. But what we're here to talk about today is how Barack Obama did in the first debate. We know not too great. And maybe get some good pointers for Joe Biden. So where do we start?
Well, first of all, it's going to be an interesting evening, because I'm like everybody else. They just said it on your news. Which Paul Ryan shows up?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real question, because this is truly more characters than Sybil.
Now, you know, Paul Ryan, though, I think has been pretty honest about where he is. He's vehemently anti-choice. He's actually for a personhood amendment. He believes in cutting taxes for everyone. Now, he's had to back off of his own positions and say, well, I'm not at the top of the ticket. It's Mitt Romney's ticket. But so he's the one who's going to be president.
Well, let's think about this for a moment, because this is going to be a moment where if Mr. Romney believed that he had to tack to the middle mm-hmm. and show up as a doppelganger for whoever he used to be, only a softer and gentler one, if we, any of us, believe that, I keep wondering whether Paul Ryan will show up on point saying what he has believed in, what he's recorded saying, all the things we know him to be. This is pretty much as far right as you get.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Or is he going to tack to the middle and show up like he's somebody else? Now, no doubt, he will try and sell it with that wonderful shirt-off sex appeal that showed up in Time magazine.
That's his big baby blues, huh?
Well, that's been what he's cashed in on. Now, mm-hmm. I don't think it plays in this particular debate. First of all, he's sitting down, so it's not about his body.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two, it really is all about Joe Biden being, I'm not going to exploit my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that's the answer tonight.
Yes. And I think, and maybe I'm wrong here, you're better at the optics of this kind of stuff, obviously. Would it serve Joe Biden to pick up on some of those lines from Ronald Reagan?
If the age discrepancy is
right.
mentioned at all,
uh-huh.
I would like to take a leaf out of, President Reagan's
right.
book right here.
Right. And I'm not going to exploit your age and inexperience. And when Paul Ryan starts lying, like, again, most of America has only seen him in his speech at the Republican convention, where it was one lie after the next. And I think it would be a great laugh line if Joe Biden said to him, there you go again.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. I think that anytime we can give them Reagan lines that turn against them, I'm very happy to see them
right.
used.
Right.
Also, the big thing, though, what must be remembered for tonight, America won't like an attack dog.
Mm-hmm.
What they will like is charm, humor, dismissive, call the truth, but
mm-hmm.
do it with there you go again, and I think you could get a lot, I mean, I think this is about dismissing Mr. Ryan
right.
if he lies.
Exactly. But he's got to point out the lies, doesn't he?
Well, I don't think he, I think this has to be there you go again.
Yeah.
Telling a new story tonight that we've never heard before from you.
Right.
You know, and I would just say, who are you? my whole thing would be to say, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I knew you because
right.
we all did a lot of debate prep, and
mm-hmm.
I watched all your recordings, and you never said anything like this.
Right. No, in fact, there's the 47% tape of Mitt Romney got so much play. We've all seen it. And unfortunately, Barack Obama didn't bring it up and Jim Lehrer didn't bring it up. But there's another tape out there of Paul Ryan from just November, this past November, talking about 30% of the American public want to be in a welfare state. This is how they want to live. And I'm really hoping Joe Biden goes to both of those. Is it 30%? Is it 47%? I mean, who are you going to represent here?
Well, that's the real question. And this will become all about, will this play? I think you can only play lies so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they don't play anymore. Or they've repeated them unchallenged so much that people believe them. So
yeah.
We have to have a moment here. And hope that, the vice president absolutely calls him on them, reminding people that these are not true facts.
Right. No, they're made up stuff. And again, that's where I think President Obama really dropped the ball last time, is that he didn't point out that Mitt Romney was just making this stuff up, that this was a guy we hadn't seen before. I think it's going to be hard for Paul Ryan because he has been pretty, pretty consistent in his very right wing stances on everything. Thing about Mitt Romney is he's a weather vane. He goes any way the wind blows. But for Paul Ryan now to come out and all of a sudden play the moderate is going to be, I think, even harder. Mitt Romney's played that role before. You know, it all depends on what office he was running for. When he was running for the Senate from Massachusetts, he said he was going to be better on LGBT issues than Ted Kennedy was. You know, he was pro-choice. He was, you know, Mr. Moderate. You know, when he decided to run for president, well, then all of a sudden he was a severe conservative. But Paul Ryan has always presented himself as the conservative's conservative.
Yeah, I think that this is a very hard place to walk back from for Mr. Ryan. I think he can soften. I think he can try and play like he's warm and fuzzy and friendly. I do not believe for one minute that he can play this any other way. You know, I don't think there's any way he's going to be able to pretend, because I think we've seen too much.
Joel Silberman of democracypartners.com is where we find you. The poll question up at tomhartman.com today is, will Biden's debate performance top Obama's? And actually, you know, I voted. I said yes, because I think Obama didn't do well. I think Joe Biden's going to easily top him. But I was surprised at how close the results are right now. It's 56% to 44%. Yes, he will. He'll challenge Ryan's lies to, oh yes, how could it not? I guess it's a one-sided answer. So I didn't. That's what I get for not reading the whole thing. How is Joe Biden going to do tonight? You've seen him debate many times.
I think
before.
Joe Biden is going to be a star tonight. I think Mr. Biden has this down to a science. He is personally charming. He's genuinely warm. He is a scrappy guy from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Ryan, with all of his workouts, has his work cut out for him tonight when he meets Joe Biden.
I think so,
and
too.
And I also think that Mr. Biden, you know, our vice president once made the mistake of taking Sarah Palin and being unduly kind to someone who was so insubstantive. I think more incredulously than, you know, deferentially.
Right.
Tonight, I am hoping that there will be no deference, but there will be warmth, a complete smile, and charm while he takes him apart.
Yeah, and Biden is charming. He does have that quality. He's a good people person, and he's a regular person, and I think that comes through.
And he is a regular person.
Yeah.
I mean, what you see with Joe Biden is what you get. That's one of the things that I so respect the vice president for. He is genuinely who he is. And I've never seen him not be that. So the authenticity question is not a question for Joe Biden. It is a question for Paul Ryan.
Exactly. One last question for you, Joel Silberman, which is, you know, you've trained a lot of candidates for debates and stuff. What do you think has been going through steps that President Obama's been worked through over the past week in preparation for next Tuesday?
Well, I mean, I would assume that, and they've so much as said so, he's reviewed the game tapes. That's what everybody does. The first thing you do is you look at your past performance, and especially if you've had a performance that you weren't pleased with, you review it immediately.
Right.
Do not run away from the tapes. And I'm sure he hasn't. I'm sure he's looked very carefully at all of the optics of his last debate. So that's step one, review the performance. Step two, remind yourself and be reminded by your sparring partners of exactly what it is that you want to get across and how not to be distracted by any of the incredulous feelings. That's the one thing that I thought about afterwards. How incredulous must it have been to be looking at someone you were debating and think, I don't know who this is.
Right.
That's got to be a very, in an odd way, shocking moment.
Absolutely. And the challenge is next time you got to verbalize that stuff. Joel Silberman.
That's the whole thing. I mean, that's where you don't put the editor.
Joel Silberman, democracypartners.com. Thank you so much. I wish Obama had trained with you. We'd be in a better place.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
All right. That is Joel Silberman from democracypartners.com. When we come back, your advice for Joe Biden tonight, or advice for the opponent.
I was tired of campaigning. I've been reacting too slow. Like a worn-out recording of some old Hannity show. And as I was debating, I read the Washington Times, and there in the opinion
editorial time. If you like weasels and liars and job destroyers at Bane, if you're not into truth much.
All right, another Rocky Mountain Mike parody. Yeah, if you like weasels and liars, you will find them in the editorial pages of the Washington Times. You know, I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman today. And occasionally I get pitched all the time for guest ideas for my show. And, you know, if somebody describes the guest they're pitching as somebody who writes regularly for the Washington Times, delete. You know, look, I'll talk to anybody who has a different viewpoint, as long as they've got something to back it up. It's like that first caller that I took who said, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm not, who am I going to believe? You or Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney says it, I'm going to believe it. Shane found the audio that I sent you, right? There's one called Romney Debates Himself. And this is, it's about 40 seconds, and it's three topics, and it's Mitt Romney and Mitt Romney. So which Mitt Romney is it? Let's hear that for a second.
I will not reduce the taxes paid by high-income Americans.
There were so many misrepresentations that there, it's going to take me a little while. Number one, I say today that we're going to cut taxes on everyone across the country by 20%, including the top 1%.
And the key to great schools, great teachers. So I reject the idea that I don't believe in great teachers or more teachers.
He says we need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? The American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government.
Actually, it's a lengthy description, but number one, pre-existing conditions are covered under my plan.
Well, suppose they were never insured before.
If they're 45 years old and they show up and they say, I want insurance because I've got a heart disease, it's like, hey, guys, we can't play the game like that. You've got to get insurance when you're well, and then if you get ill, then you're going to be covered.
All right, so three simple topics there. One, the first one that I mentioned earlier, right? On tax cuts, Mitt Romney very clearly said, we're going to cut taxes by 20% across the board for everyone. Then in the debate last week, he said, what are you talking about? I never said I'm going to cut taxes on the wealthiest 2%. Lie! That is a blatant, bold-faced lie. Number two, teachers. Oh, we need more teachers, right? No, but do you remember right after the Wisconsin recall failed? And that's questionable as to why it failed. But did you not get the message? We don't want more big government. That means teachers, firefighters, and police officers. That's government. So, okay, two. That's two lies. The third one, the second clip there was from Mitt Romney's appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno back in March. And Jay Leno, much to his credit, pushed him on this one and said, well, what about pre-existing conditions? And Mitt Romney says, no, well, you know, yeah, as long as you've had continual coverage. But that's not what this is about. And in another bold-faced lie last week in the debate, Mitt Romney said, oh, my plan, you know, it covers pre-existing conditions. Yeah, as long as you've had continual coverage, which is the problem. The man lies. And my biggest complaint about President Obama's performance last week was that he didn't call him out on the lies. All right, so I think Joe Biden will be definitely stronger in this debate than President Obama was. One, he's got, you know, that debate to look at. All right, let's go back to the phones. Marshall, listening to KPOJ from Beaverton, Oregon. Hi, Marshall.
Yes, hi. I wanted to mention that Paul Ryan seems to make a big deal out of being Catholic. And I couldn't help but think, what is a Catholic lying think about his Catholicism? I projected him in the confessional, saying, bless me, Father, for I have lied to the American people for my own advancement.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if that would take form ever. That's all. My only comment is how it would come in conflict with his religion.
Yeah, good question. You know, the thing is, if you've seen the nuns on the bus, oh, my goodness, the one lead nun on the bus did just such an electrifying speech at the Democratic Convention. She was awesome. But, you know, this is my problem with religious hypocrisy. Someone like, you know, Paul Ryan, who wears his Catholicism on his sleeve, just does not adhere to any of the tenets of Catholicism to take care of those less fortunate than you. This is my problem with those people who are the evangelical Christians who claim to follow the teachings of Christ. No, they don't. No, not at all. They follow, and Paul Ryan especially follows the teachings of Ayn Rand. That is not Christian-like, as I jokingly say, but I think it's true. As a secular atheist Jew, I'm a hell of a lot more Christian than most of these Christians who, you know, claim to be Christian. Anyway, Jerry, listening to WWRL on Long Island. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. And
sure.
By the way, I love Tom, but I also love when you fill in. This is your first time perhaps filling in for Tom, but I've heard you before fill in for Andy Rose.
Yeah, yep.
But on the vice presidential debate and what Biden needs to do, I think what Biden needs to do is, first of all, he needs to avoid getting put on the defensive and lost in the weeds about the issue of the $716
right.
billion dollars in cuts that both Paul Ryan and Romney say Obama makes to Medicare. Instead, I think Biden needs to just say this is untrue and instead pivot and put Paul Ryan on the defensive. And this is where I slightly disagree with your guest. I think Joe Biden needs to attack Paul Ryan about both the severe cuts to Medicaid that would even hurt autistic children,
yes.
were they to be put into effect, because there's autistic children and children with Down syndrome, and
yep.
this, in addition to poor adults who depend on Medicaid, and also Ryan's plan for Medicare. Biden needs to say that's true, that your plan, Mr. Ryan, would end Medicare as we know it, specifically by replacing traditional Medicare with an inadequate partial voucher for high-priced private health insurance. And what this voucher does is shortchange senior citizens. It would be like giving $3 to a homeless man to buy a sandwich when you know for a fact that sandwich is going to cost $5.
That's right. You're so right. Or 10. Thank you for the call, Jerry. Some really, really good points. And I think Joe Biden is going to do what you say. I think he's strong enough at debating. He's experienced enough. And he's a regular guy. I think it'll come naturally to him. Nicole Sandler for Tom Hartman. Don't go away.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right. Tom is out today. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com. Really happy and honored to be here filling in. We're going to take a little break from presidential politics for a few minutes and turn our sights to New York City, where they have a program going on that when I first heard about it, I thought, this can't possibly be happening. This sounds unconstitutional. And it's something known as Stop and Frisk. And it's a program in which thousands of, I think most usually young men of color, are stopped by the police for no apparent reason other than the fact that they're out on the streets and maybe look suspicious. And just as the name implies, they are stopped and frisked. Well, one of these young men, a Harlem teenager named Alvin, had been stopped and frisked too many times, and he finally, decided to use his cell phone recorder and record the audio when the police stopped him yet again. And we've got a tiny little bit of audio that's posted up in a brilliant piece at thenation.com. Shano, can you play that? It's heavily bleeped because, and by the way, the words that are being bleeped are the words of the police officers. Here we go.
You want to go to jail?
For what?
Shut
for
your
what?
Mouth, kid.
Why am I getting arrested
shut
for?
Shut your mouth.
When am I getting arrested for?
For being a mutt, you know what?
Oh, so that's a law, being a mutt?
Who the
cuz, you don't get here tell me why I have a hoodie, why I have a good bag on that set for my hoodie. Why are you putting it on my arm way back here?
Shut your mouth.
You asking me questions.
Were you an explorer at one point?
I was, and I...
Respect.
Because that's stopping you. Always stop me for no reason.
You want somebody talking to you?
Why you have? Why you pushing?
Break your arm.
You're gonna break my arm for what?
Dude, I'm gonna break
for what?
Who's your father?
You're gonna punch me in my face?
Where?
He's not gonna answer. He don't got a phone.
You're in traffic?
Nope. Yup.
He's a traffic cop.
Yup.
Figures. Traffic.
Don't touch me. Okay, he's a traffic.
Why you pushing that for? Why you pushing that for?
Okay, it got even worse. That was just a tiny excerpt of it. Joining us on the line right now are Ross Tuttle and Aaron Schneider, documentary filmmakers. They're co-producers of The Hunted and the Hated, an inside look at the NYPD stop and frisk policy. That documentary is posted this week at The Nation. Ross and Aaron, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Were you aware of how the police were treating these people that they stop in the streets of New York before you heard Alvin's tape?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were. I mean, Erin can speak to that well. She'd been covering this for quite some time, but we'd been hearing it a lot from people in the communities. You know, I think some of it for outsiders is hard to believe, but when you speak to people who are on the ground in some of these communities, they'll tell you this all the time, and they'll tell you that the numbers are higher than what the police department is reporting.
In your piece, and again, I encourage everybody to go and see it. There's a link to the piece from TomHartmann.com. You know, you talk to some police officers, and some of them you have to, you know, blank out their faces and disguise their voices. But they talk about how they're forced to do this even though they know it's wrong.
Well, that's true. I mean, a lot of these officers, and, you know, we spoke to just a hand. I mean, there are others we've spoken to. I think Erin has gone around and spoken to a lot informally on the streets, and I think heard a lot of the same things where some officers are saying. And, you know, we sampled a small portion for the video. Yeah, that they're being pushed, they're being forced, they're being given quotas to go out and get certain numbers of stops, summonses, arrests, feeling like they're getting a lot of pressure put on them, and that if they don't meet these numbers, as it says in the video, they'll be retaliated against in a number of ways.
And if they want to be promoted, they have to get these numbers up. I think it's called a 250-something.
The U.S. 250 form is the form that they have to fill out when they conduct a stop, question, frisk. And what's happening is that these police officers all over the city, all the boroughs, all different precincts, depending on their commanding officers, will ask them to get a certain number of these UF 250 forms, which means the stop and frisk form.
Right.
So they have to go out and stop, stop people for walking down the street, or they just kind of make up the stops. I mean, I've even talked to police officers who've talked about using, you know, just going to someone's mailbox and taking out a name and writing it on the form just so that they can go into their commanding officer and say, yep, I got, you know, 20
wow.
stops or however much.
Wow.
And just to clarify, the officers, the ones on the ground, the beat cops, they're not, this isn't for them to get promoted. They'll get no promotion from this. What they will get maybe is special assignments, as they say, or they might get other little perks. They might get the days off that they ask for. They might get to have weekends off. It's the officers who don't meet these quotas who get punished by getting bad assignments, by getting put in dangerous posts by themselves. By being denied days off, and by being denied vacation days, and by getting low evaluations. And sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, by getting denied, you know, something like vacation days, it's such a small thing. But for them, actually, it's a really, you know, it's a really big deal.
Sure.
And they end up competing in a way, you know, to get these things and to try to meet these quotas, even though, you know, they feel it's sometimes detrimental to the work that they feel like they're supposed to be doing.
Now, we just heard a little bit of the recording that this young man, Alvin, made. And what had happened before this is just, you know, maybe 20 minutes earlier, the same cops had stopped him. And he was walking down the street, and they pulled him, you know, pulled up to him again. And I guess that's when he decided he saw them coming, and he said, you know, I'm going to record this thing. This is the only known recordings of a stop and frisk in action, right? How did you meet this guy?
Well, actually, I've been working on the movement because Stop and Frisk has kind of been unfolding as more and more activists get involved for, mm-hmm. I would say, over a year now. And so came into contact with Alvin's stepfather who had the tape. And, you know, he'd been sharing it with people in the movement, and people were just like, yep, that's what's happening. You know, they didn't really know that the whole world doesn't have evidence of what's happening, because all these people go through the same type of a stop, I mean, on a regular basis, some people on a daily basis. And
wow.
So, you know, when Alvin's stepfather shared the audio, I was doing some work around the issue as well, and then so was Ross, and we came together and just basically knew that this was the only known evidence of what so many hundreds of thousands of people not only are going through but are talking about, you know, in New York a lot. So it was
sure.
nice to be able to use the audio to bring it to the people who don't know about it and who definitely don't experience it and can't even consider what it's like.
You know, at the beginning of the segment, I said when I first heard about the Stop and Frisk program, I thought this can't be constitutional. Have there been challenges in the court to this? I mean, what's happening is a lot of people, mostly young men of color, are being stopped and frisked, and maybe there's a small amount of marijuana found on them. I think the arrests for that are way up. What's happening with this? Has there been a court challenge to it?
Go ahead, Erin.
Oh, there's a couple cases by the NYCLU and a class action lawsuit, and it's both stop and frisks. They're happening inside buildings as well, called housing verticals, when like the police go into a housing project and they see the kids in the stairwells, they'll stop them. And so that's happening. There's also happening in these livery taxis. Like a taxi will be stopped and whomever's in the back seat will just be told to get out. And
oh my God.
So those types of stops are being challenged on the constitutional level, that there's no impetus. And as you can hear in the audio, he's not necessarily looking suspicious is not,
it's not a crime.
In criminality.
And right, I thought there had to be a reason. There had to be some kind of a reason to warrant something like this.
There has to be reasonable suspicion. And there's another important case that's making its way through the courts right now that's being led by the Center for Constitutional Rights.
Right.
And it's a class action that was just certified earlier this spring, which is challenging the constitutionality of the practice. And one of the main things that they're saying is that a lot of these stops, there is not a reasonable suspicion, and you can hear it in this video, that they can't articulate a reason, a sound, solid reason for stopping him. In fact, what they do, and as the lead attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights said, they're basically announcing the unconstitutionality of this stuff.
Ross Tuttle and Erin Schneider, find the piece at thenation.com. Stunning.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You must watch this video and read the article. Big thanks to Ross and Erin for joining us today and making us know what's going on.
Don't care if it's Chinatown or Rock Riverside. I don't have any visa left them all behind. I'm in a New York state of mind.
Unfortunately, the story we were just talking about is one of the sadder parts of New York. I lived in New York a long time ago, and I'm sorry, the stop and frisk stuff is just wrong. Just wrong. All right. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman, and now it's your turn. You know the number, right? 866-987-THOM, 866-987-8466. And let's go to the phones. I know Johnny, listening to AM 1090 in Seattle. You've been waiting for a long time.
Hi, Nicole. Hi. Hey, I just wanted to mention a few quick things. One is that I think I had an issue with your guest earlier about how we need to be more passive and just cool and collective and everything in these debates. I think that's the reason we're losing a lot of them.
I don't think that's what he said.
Coming across as being as bold as we could. I think that's the only reason George weaseled his way into the White House before, and a lot of these other Republicans are getting in there.
Yeah, I think you misunderstood what he said, because I didn't hear Joel saying to be passive.
Okay, well, maybe. I'm just saying I think they need to toughen up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Joe Biden's a classic example. Okay, so the PBS funding, I think they're not going after Big Bird so much as they're going after Frontline, the investigative journal documentary series. I think that they come out with some stuff that really hits home with a lot of people. And if they get rid of that, I don't know where journalism's going to be in this country. The other thing is, hello?
I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay, I heard that Walmart is the biggest contributor to the Republican Party in the entire world. I don't think a lot of people know that when they walk through the doors.
I didn't know that, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, so anyway, just something to chew on.
Okay, well, thank you for the call.
Let's stay Frontline, though.
Yeah, we got to stay Frontline, absolutely. No, and the thing about the news on PBS is not, left-leaning. It's just weird how sort of the truth seems to have a liberal bias. Yeah, funny how that works. All right. Mike, listening to Sirius in Washington, D.C. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk specifically about the fact that the left is not being honest with itself, that the Obama administration has done more to attack American civil liberties than Bush ever did, and Bush was disastrous.
Yeah. Okay. In what way? Are you talking about the NDAA? Are you what respect?
I'll just start with something simple. The NSA right now has opened up listening posts. There's a huge center that's outside of Salt Lake City that's mm-hmm. 5.5 times the size of the Capitol building that's collecting data files on every American out there when you use any form of electronic communication,
yeah.
and it's being done without a warrant. So,
I'm not going to argue with you on this. I actually agree with you. I think the Obama administration has been atrocious on a lot of civil liberty type issues. Here's my problem. If I look anything that Obama has done, Mitt Romney is going to keep going and double down on it. But I think if we elected a progressive Congress, and this is what I push for in my show all the time, is that with the presidency, we've got two choices. Sorry, but that's the way it is. It's going to be either Mitt Romney.
What state do you live in?
I live in Florida. I live in Florida. It's going to be.
You might be in one of the battleground states.
I am. So it's going to be.
Right.
But let me finish, and I'll let you finish. Hold on. I'm going to give you time to say what you need to say. But it's going to be Mitt Romney or Barack Obama come November 7th. That's the reality of the thing. And at least if we have a progressive Congress, we can push Obama to do the right thing. If you have Mitt Romney, it's game over. Things are going to get even worse.
Let me tell you, are you familiar with what derivatives are?
Yes, I'm familiar with what derivatives are. Yeah, it's what brought us down.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So what I want to let you know is Obama is a corporatist.
Yeah,
I agree. The five largest banks have increased their derivative exposure to $230 trillion. That's a 39% increase under his watch, with the U.S. taxpayer on the hook if this goes bad. So the biggest risk we have, again, is for another one of these meltdowns. Forget a billion here and a billion here. We're talking like huge amounts of liability, and they've done nothing to stop it.
I agree. Dodd-Frank didn't go far enough. We needed to bring back Glass-Steagall. They should have broken up the so-called too-big-to-fail banks. But let me ask you, what do you think it would be like under a Mitt Romney presidency?
Well, this is what I would say to everyone out there. If you don't live in a battleground state and you actually want to make a real statement, you need to look at the whole political process and start voting third party, because the presidential commission that's been set up is like Coke and Pepsi deciding what's going to be on the soda aisle. You're not going to hear anything about civil liberties. You're not going to hear a lot about green issues, because the Coke and Pepsi, the Republicans and the Democrats, do not want anyone else on that stage so that you as a public can hear about what's really going on. So the real protest vote, to me, is the 40% of the population that's not voting. And maybe that part of the reason is because they just keep hearing the two main parties yapping. I mean,
right.
The other day, Ralph Nader got a lawsuit out in the state of Maine because the DNC was trying to stop him from getting on the ballots in 2004. So it's just as bad on both sides of the aisle.
I agree. But I do believe, look, I'm in Florida. If I were in Ohio, if I were in Pennsylvania, if I were in Virginia, if I were in Colorado, there is no way in hell that I would even consider, and you're talking probably voting for Jill Stein. Look, I like Jill Stein. She doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of winning. And she could be the spoiler that gives the White House to Mitt Romney. And as bad as things might be in terms of civil liberties and some other issues under Obama, they'll be immeasurably worse under a President Romney. Again, the thing we need to focus on is getting real progressives elected to Congress, where we can push President Obama, a Democratic administration, a little further to the left into doing the right thing by the American people. Now, in terms of the Green Party, and I have this argument with people in the chat room during my show, Monday through Thursday mornings, 10 to noon Eastern at RadioOrNot.com, who insist on voting for Jill Stein, is, you know what, on November 7th, Green Party, start running candidates, getting involved in every community race, in every county race, in every local state race, and build the party from the ground up, because the Green Party now doesn't exist on that kind of a level.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
All right, I'm Nicole Sandler, again, of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman, back with more of your calls next. So stick around and call in.
Call out the instigators, because there's something new.
you got to get together sooner or later. Yeah. All right. Nicole Sandler back with you, filling in for Tom Hartman today, taking your calls at 866-987-TOM. I'm on Twitter at Nicole Sandler, and I'm on Twitter a lot. And something just passed my Twitter feed a number of times. Apparently, Politico has video up on the site. Congressman Steve King, he of Iowa, he debated Kristi Vilsack earlier this week, and there's video that shows Steve King broke his own rules, the rules that said no notes. He used the Sarah Palin poor man's teleprompter. Yeah, he wrote the notes on his hand. Not good. Not a good visual, you know? I have a feeling that may not bode too well for Congressman King. I don't think Paul Ryan's going to be that stupid. But, you know, the question is he going to toe his, you know, hardline, severe Republican line? He never used the term severe Republican. That was Mitt Romney. But Paul Ryan always has been, you know, a very right-wing Republican. He believes in women not having any choice. In fact, he co-wrote or co-sponsored the legislation along with Todd Akin, yes, that Todd Akin, for personhood for a fertilized egg. Yeah, like the moment after conception, he thinks that fertilized egg should have property rights. This, is wingnut land. So that's the guy who's going to take the stage tonight. Let's just take more of your calls. Let's go to Adrian from Toledo, Ohio, actually driving a truck, I guess, through Toledo, Ohio, listening on Sirius. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. Sure. After listening to you, and I've been waiting here for a while, but after listening to you, I got a couple points. A couple things to bring up.
Okay.
First thing is not necessarily agreeing with that one caller about, you know, the Green Party. Obviously, I'm going to vote for Obama because he represents the working man anywhere more than Romney. I'm not happy with him, so in a sense, you know, the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
But, and he's not even evil. But how far the parties both have gone to the right. Can you imagine today if somebody like Eisenhower were president, and somebody like an Eisenhower from the 50s were to promote a policy of building a highway system with government money across the country, would that even have a chance? It wouldn't happen.
Look, when Obama came in, I was really hoping for a new deal, because that's really what we need. We need a new WPO. We need a new works program. And we have an aging and failing infrastructure. There, a parking garage here in Miami at Miami-Dade College just collapsed yesterday. There's so much work that needs to be done. And you know what? The money needs to come from the government. And that will get people back to work. That will get the economy going again. Look, I'm no economist, but it's just common sense.
They're calling Eisenhower a socialist today. I swear to God.
And Ronald Reagan couldn't make it through a Republican primary today.
Second reason I called you, and then I'll get off because I know other people are trying to call in, was reason I called you is I'm driving down here, and talk about shock value. I get behind a truck, and it has all over it. This is not done. This is professionally done. There's a picture of a hand with a plastic, you know, latex glove, looks like a doctor's hand, and two fingers. And in between, there's this all this blood and stuff. And then this in between, it looks like a newt. And it says, this is the picture of an 11-and-a-half-week-old fetus.
Oh, God.
Who are you going to vote for? And then on the side, both sides of the truck, just the same. And it says, vote pro-life. And on the front, and they must have spent, I mean, this is probably not the only truck, but it's going up and down the highway, you know, promoting this stuff. And, you know, they just pull out the old shock stuff.
Oh my God.
No matter how you feel about abortion, that's not the right thing to do. They would never get my vote, even if I was pro-life, with that kind of crap.
That's obscene. I'm sorry. Look, I find that a hell of a lot more obscene than two people making love. The definition of obscenity is up to the community. That is obscene. Adrian,
absolutely.
Thank you for the call. You know, speaking of the whole concept of pro-life, I don't like that term. I'm pro-life. You got people on the right who claim to be pro-life who are also, you know, gung-ho death penalty. Kill them, you know. Shane, you've got the audio there. It's Mitt Romney's morphing on abortion. And it starts off in 1994 when, I guess Mitt Romney, I think he, at the time he was running against Ted Kennedy for the Senate. If I have my timetable correct. It starts in 94. It goes up to 2005, I think, when he was running to be governor of Massachusetts. Then it goes to 2007 during his first presidential debates when he ran and lost the nomination. And then 2012. Can you just play that? I think it's about 2 minutes, but the progression is unbelievable.
I believe that abortion should be safe and legal in this country. I have since the time that my mom took that position when she ran in 1970 as a U.S. Senate candidate. I believe that since Roe v. Wade has been the law for 20 years, that we should sustain and support it. And I sustain and support that law and the right of a woman to make that choice.
When asked, will I preserve and protect a woman's right to choose, I make an unequivocal answer, yes.
Wow.
I am absolutely committed to my promise to maintain the status quo with regards to laws relating to abortion and choice. So far I've been able to successfully do that, and my personal philosophical views about this issue are not something that I think would do anything other than distract from what I think is a more critical agenda, which relates to the topic we're talking about today, but also jobs, education, and health care.
We should overturn Roe v. Wade and return these issues to the states.
Now he's the presidential candidate.
I would welcome a circumstance
overturn Roe v. Wade.
Where there was
really?
Such a consensus in this country that we said we don't want to have abortion in this country at all, period. That'd be wonderful. I'd be delighted.
Would you sign that bill?
Let me say it. I'd be delighted to sign that bill.
I'd be delighted to sign a bill overturning
Roe v. Wade. The Constitution, and we endorse legislation to make it clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to unborn children. Do you support that part of the Republican platform?
You know, I do support the Republican platform, and I support that being part of the Republican platform.
What's your view on abortion?
That's a kid.
That's
asking.
A question I did not expect from you, but I'm happy I got it. I am pro-life. I am pro-life, and what I'd like to see happen. You know, this is a tender and sensitive issue, and people, good people, come out on both sides of this issue. And so I respect people who have different views on this issue. What I'd like to see happen would be for the Supreme Court to say, look, we're going to overturn Roe v. Wade and return to the states the authority to decide whether they want to have abortion or not in their state by state. That was the way it was before Roe v. Wade. So I am firmly pro-life. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, sir, right behind you.
Well, the platform as written at this convention for the Republicans does not allow for exceptions on abortion with regard to the health of the mother or rape or incest. Is that where you are?
No, my position has been clear throughout this campaign. I'm
throughout
in favor
this campaign,
of,
right,
abortion
right.
being legal in the case mm-hmm. of rape and incest and the health and life of the mother. But recognize, this is the decision that will be made by the Supreme Court. The Democrats try and make this a political issue every 4 years, but this is a matter in the courts. It's been settled for some time in the courts.
Yeah, you see, the Democrats try to make this an issue every 4 years. No, the Democrats are fine with it being settled law. It's the Republicans who keep trying to take away a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to do with her body what is best for her, for her body, for her family. Right. It's Mitt Romney who has not been clear throughout his political career, maybe through this campaign, except the other night he said in the debate, I know of no legislation that would limit, you know, a woman's right to abortions. Really? Mitt Romney, which is it? Can the man be honest and can he like take one position and stick to it? No. So here's my question for you. What is worse, being like a right wing nut job, basket case, crazy person, teabagger? Or being an Etch-a-Sketch, being the weather vane who just blows any way the wind blows, you know, whatever, depending on the audience you're talking to, that's the position you put forth. I say I'd rather deal with the right-wing nut job, and in this case, I think that's Paul Ryan. I think Paul Ryan has these positions, he believes them, this is where he stands, this is the way he, you know, wants to write legislation. His budget, you know, the Catholic bishops said it's very un-Catholic. I mean, it's very un-Christian. This is bad for people. It's got no social justice in it at all. And then on the other hand, you got Mitt Romney, who doesn't stand for anything. At least with the Paul Ryan type candidate, you know what you're going to get. You know, you get the crazy right-wing guy. With Mitt Romney, you don't know what you get. All right, we've only got about a minute. Steve in Brooklyn, listening to 1600 AM. Hi.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Great. You got to make it quick. We got about a minute.
Okay, Nicole, I'm calling to comment about the stop and frisk policy with the NYPD. I'm a retired New York City police officer. I retired in 2006.
Yeah.
And from a law enforcement perspective, the policy, if done correctly, deters crime and works very, very well. But unfortunately, you have people in the police department that abuse it. And like the audio tape that you let everybody hear a little while ago, stuff like that does not let the policy work as effective as it should.
You know what? I see how it could deter crime, but what about that poor innocent kid with the hoodie who's walking down the street who keeps getting harassed by the cops? You know what, Steve? I want to get into this a little bit more with you. Will you hold the line through the break, and we can pick it up?
How long will it be?
It'll be 4 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, hold on, because I want to ask you about this, because I don't understand how, number one, it's not constitutional. Without, you know, cause, how you can pull somebody over and frisk them. It doesn't make sense. Nicole Sandler, in for Tom Hartman. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And this is an important subject.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
If you want to get in on it, 866-987-THOM is the number. Nicole Sandler from RadioOrNot.com for Tom.
I'm leaving today. I want to be part of it. New York, New York.
All right. I'm Nicole Sandler, back with you, filling in for Tom Hartman today. And I love New York. I was born in New York. I actually, after college down here in Florida, went back to New York City, lived and worked there for 5 years before moving out to L.A. I love New York. But I hate this stop and frisk program. And we talked about it at the beginning of the hour. There's a story that is linked to at The Nation. You can get it at TomHartman.com. And listener Steve is in Brooklyn, a retired New York City police officer. Thank you for holding. Because I really want to hear how you can defend this. I mean, my problem with it is...
Nicole, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you hate it?
Because it allows police officers just to harass innocent people who are doing nothing wrong other than walking down the street. And this kid, Alvin, had been harassed so many times doing nothing wrong. He was just guilty of walking while young and of color.
Okay, so let me just explain. The stop, question, and frisk is really what it is. It's stop, question, and frisk. And basically what it gives the police officer a right to do is if he sees somebody with reasonable suspicion, let's say a person is walking by a car and the police officer observes him, and the police officer thinks that he may be looking to break into a car, and then the police officer sees him fiddling around with the door lock.
But that's
that
not what's happening. Go ahead.
I'm trying to explain to you how it should work.
Okay.
If the police officer sees the individual trying to get into the car, that raises the level of suspicion from mere suspicion to reasonable suspicion, and then the police officer has the right to go over and question the individual and can only frisk the individual if they feel that the individual may have some type of weapon, a bulge in his belt, a bulge in his pant pocket. That's the way it should work. However, police officers are forced to get these UF-250s,
right,
and they are forced to go out there and make these numbers. So people are being stopped and questioned and harassed because the police officers need these numbers to bring back to their command superiors.
Exactly, and that's what the film, that's what the film shows, and that is, I'm sorry, it turns my stomach.
Well, I understand that, and as a police officer for 20 years, I will tell you that I worked all over the city, and I made hundreds and hundreds of stops. And some individuals did not like that I stopped them.
Mm-hmm.
Some individuals had no problems with it. I tried my best to follow the policy. However, I will admit to you that there were instances where I stopped somebody because I had to get a UF-250 form for my command.
There you go.
For my commanding officers. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I follow exactly what you're saying. If there was a way to make sure that it was only used appropriately, that would be fine. But these quotas, and I'm sorry, it sounds like there are quotas. You have to do it. You've got to bring these forms back. Do away with them. Use it when it's legitimate. But making cops do this, and the behavior of some cops, what you heard in that tape was just disgusting.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because when you're dealing with the public, that kind of is, I hate to say this, but police officers sometimes feel it necessary to do that to get the upper hand in an intimidation type of way, because you never know who you're dealing with.
Yeah, well, in this case, they did, because they had stopped this kid 20 minutes earlier. They recognized him when he said, "Why are you doing this to me?" They got violent with him. And I'm sorry, that happens more often than it should. Steve, I really thank you for the call. I thank you for explaining to us, although I'm still not satisfied. I think this needs to go to court and be challenged. All right, time now to check in with the Talk Radio News Service. Justin Duckham, I know, is in Kentucky, the site of tonight's vice presidential debate. Hey, Justin.
Hey, it's great to be here. We are en route right now to Danville, to Center College, and we are looking forward to seeing some fireworks tonight.
Yeah, now I spoke with you this morning on my show, and you were en route there then. So where are you?
Right now we are in Lexington. We are taking a long trip. We had a brief period where we had to stop and do stations, but we should be there soon, and we are going to be coming in, and we are going to be hitting up the spin room afterwards, and we'll be calling into the show tomorrow to give our post-debate analysis.
Okay, so we'll get that from you then. So there's really not much to talk about with the debate tonight, other than we'll see it tonight. I think it starts at 9 Eastern. Is it 9 to 10:30 Eastern?
Yes, it does. It's 9 to 10:30 Eastern.
Okay, and so we'll do the post-mortem on it tomorrow. I do want to ask you, Daryl Issa held a hearing yesterday on the attack on the American consulate in Benghazi that killed four Americans. And the Republican Party that held this hearing inadvertently gave away top secret information about a CIA house, a place in Benghazi. Have they admitted how they screwed up yet?
There has been an acknowledgement of it, I believe, from some members of the Intelligence Committee. But I do not believe there was going to be any, major repercussions from it. It does not look like there's going to be any investigations into that. But you can almost guarantee that there's some behind-the-scenes conversations going on
right now that are
telling them to avoid that in the future.
Jason Chaffetz, the one who Soledad O'Brien questioned him on her show the other day, as he's criticizing the Obama administration for there not being enough security at our embassies around the world, she asked him and cornered him on the fact that he voted to cut funding for security for our embassies around the world, and he admitted it and said, yeah, but it's still Obama's fault that this happened. It's just, and he's the guy who went, oh, my God, you're showing a secret location. It's like a comedy of errors. Now, then after that today, Daryl Issa decided he's going to hold another hearing at taxpayer expense, mind you, to look into the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the recent job reports, because they don't believe the numbers?
Well, from what I heard, he said that there was legitimate questions, but I don't believe there is going to be a hearing. I don't believe he said there was. If there's new information on that, I apologize. But
Today he said there's going to be a hearing.
I'm not surprised. It seems sort of like, what he's been pursuing so far. He's been going after Fast and Furious and a lot of things that really just don't add up.
Yeah, don't add up. Justin Duckham from the Talk Radio News Service at talkradionews.com. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have fun tonight.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It is the Tom Hartman Program, but I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman, and I'm really excited about our next guest. And to let you in a little secret, I got to meet Senator Sherrod Brown this summer at Netroots Nation in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was sort of like a giddy schoolgirl, but Senator Brown, I think we sort of had a little moment there. I don't know if you remember or not, but
I do. So thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. It's an honor to be here filling in for Tom, but certainly to talk with you. How are things going in Ohio right now?
They're good. I think that the debate, the aftermath of the debate, settled in. Ohio's starting to. Our unemployment rates dropped over three points in the last 2+ years, and people are starting to feel it. I'm in Toledo today, where the auto rescue played a big role, but we're also seeing solar energy manufacturing here and a lot of things around Lake Erie with job creation. So things aren't great, but they're getting better, and I think that's why the public's looking forward rather than backward in this presidential race and in my Senate race.
Good. You're in the Senate race. There's a lot of money being thrown at that race against you by these interests who are now empowered by the Supreme Court's ruling on Citizens United. I think it just passed the $21.1 million mark. That's pretty obscene.
To put some context in it, my whole TV budget in my campaign 6 years ago was $6 million, which is a lot of money.
It is.
But they've already spent almost four times that just in. From Karl Rove and his allies, and it really is. I mean, it's Wall Street, it's Chinese interests of the corporations that are trying to outsource jobs. It's the oil companies. It's the people that don't like somebody that stands up and fights. And I mean, I wear that with some badge of honor, the fact they spent so much money. But on the other hand, it gets a little tiresome.
I'm sure. Now, when you get back in the Senate for your second term, will there be a real push to overturn Citizens United by constitutional amendment or by legislation, by some manner of getting?
I think, Nicole, we're going to try on several fronts. I mean, we're going to try to bring back again the Disclose Act, which is the legislation to at least make them disclose where the money's coming from. If it's laundered through somebody, which it almost always is, then we want to at least know that. We're organizing. I invite people to come to my website, SherrodBrown.com. We have literally 500,000 people have signed up on our website to help us at SherrodBrown.com in a grassroots movement to fight back against this. And, partly we need a new Supreme Court. We're going to try a constitutional amendment, but that's a pretty uphill fight because you got to get 38 state legislatures, and a lot of these state legislatures are owned by the same interest groups that are part of Citizens United. So it really is a gargantuan battle on behalf of democracy, not to overstate it, but what these people are doing. You just on the news show talked about voter suppression. So they're trying to suppress the vote among low income and elderly people and minorities. And at the same time, they're trying to buy elections on the other end. And it's more of a threat to democracy than anything in my lifetime.
And not only the money, but as you mentioned, the fact that they are trying, by they, I mean the other side of the aisle, are trying to stop people from voting. And there's been it's been really ugly in Ohio in that, first of all, they lied. I know that's a shocker, but they lied about President Obama filing a lawsuit claiming that he wanted to stop military people from being able to vote 3 days before Election Day, when it was the contrary. The Obama administration wanted to make sure everybody in Ohio could vote during those 3 days. Well, the latest appeals court just ruled in favor of the administration and the people of Ohio, and now the Secretary of State there is trying to take it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's outrageous. I mean, they do a lot of things. The right wing does a lot of things, and these corporate interests that have such a lockhold on too many cases in our government do a lot of things. But the most cynical, reprehensible, and morally reprehensible thing they're trying to do is suppress voting. They are putting billboards. My wife actually is my wife's a columnist.
My wife's awesome, Connie Schultz.
She writes for Creator Syndicate now, and she wrote a column yesterday about what they're doing in Cleveland, posting billboards outside of all kinds of places, the civic centers, rec centers, all saying, basically threatening people, if you cheat at all, you can go to jail. And
right.
it's kind of message to people that is just outrageous. I mean, there's not vote fraud. That's not the issue. There's not vote fraud in this society, in this country, of any appreciable amount. But there are people that are trying to stop people from voting, and they should be ashamed of themselves. And that includes a lot of elected officials in Ohio that are part of this.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that the Secretary of State of Ohio is challenging an appeals court ruling and trying to take it to the Supreme Court to keep people from voting, and on top of that, spending their money in the process to do this is mind-boggling.
Yeah, but they're spending tax dollars doing it. What they're also doing is they're injecting, to do this 3 weeks before, 3.5 weeks before the election, they're injecting more confusion so that some people are going to not be sure, do I need a voter ID? When are the polls going to be open? When's early voting? And, you know, people that are, this is, you know, if you wear a coat and tie to work and you're an executive, you can get off work anytime and figure out a way to go vote. But people that are struggling, if you have to stand in line for 2 hours and you got to pick your kid up and you got to take them to band practice, or you're a single parent and you're barely making it. You don't have time for this. You don't have time to stand in line for 2 hours. You want it to be a little more convenient. And those are the people that you saw it in Romney's little speech in that Florida fundraiser. He didn't care about those people. And there is far too much of that. And it's a different Republican Party than 30 years ago. And there's far too much of that in the modern Republican Party.
Yeah, Senator Sherrod Brown, there's also another question, and this came up in 2004, and that is of the electronic voting machines. And there are some being used in some counties in Ohio this year that are owned by a company called Hart InterCivic, and now we're finding out there are ties to Bain Capital and Mitt Romney bundlers. Are you concerned with the integrity of these electronic voting machines?
I'm always concerned with just the integrity of the system. I was Secretary of State in the 80s, and we had an electoral system that was strictly bipartisan. Every board of elections was two Republicans and two Democrats, and we monitored to make sure it stayed that way. What we do now, and this is it's a bit senseless, but it's what we have to do. I mean, it's a commentary in the system, is we have a lot of huge number of volunteer lawyers who are volunteers and do election protection, and they're well-trained. The Obama campaign's leading on this. We're helping with it, but they're really in charge of it. And these are lawyers that we've been training for months. They've done it in past elections, so they're already pretty good at it, and we've been working with them for months to keep their eye on all of this. And, you know, whether it's the electronic voting machines, whether it's asking voter IDs to polls, whether it's Republican activists calling people and telling them things that are untrue about the voting situation, the hours and voter ID and all that. So we are just very aware of that and very ready for it. I don't think there's a state in the country that does election protection as well, partly because we've had to for so many elections in a row. And I don't think there's a state where we have the kind of organization in my Senate race and working with the president. That's really why coming to SherrodBrown.com can help, if people come and sign up for us to help. I mean, either volunteer in the state and make calls and contribute whatever they want to do. The way to beat back the $21 million they're spending against me, and the way to beat back what they're trying to do to block voter suppression against the president, me, and every other progressive, all of that, this grassroots effort matters in all of that.
It absolutely does. And just a suggestion from a concerned citizen out here, I would love to see us follow Ireland's lead in this one and scrap those electronic voting machines and use paper ballots and count them by hand. I think it's the only fair way to do it.
I increasingly think that. I didn't used to think that, but I think there's too much potential now.
Good. Me too. SherrodBrown.com is the website. We need you back in the Senate. I mean, it's not a choice. It's a necessity. Sherrod Brown, it's so good to talk with you. I'm as I told you when we met, I'm a big fan of yours and of your wife. Thank you so much for coming on today.
We'll keep working together. Thanks, Nicole.
All right.
Keep
take
doing
care.
What you're doing. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. Sherrod Brown. Yeah, you know, I feel like a groupie here because he's awesome. Nicole Sandler for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, on the other side of this break, we're going to talk to Ari Berman of The Nation and find out more of what's happening in Ohio with the voter caging. I guess I should answer the question because I'm obviously not Tom Hartman. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman. And I'm such a dork because I'm still a little giddy talking to Sherrod Brown. You know, there are a few members of the Senate that I get this way over. Bernie Sanders is one, too. And we'll see. I don't know if he's going to be here with us tomorrow or not, but I hope so. Anyway, I told you I met Sherrod Brown at Netroots Nation this summer, and I've got the pictures of the two of us up on my Facebook page. I can't add any more friends because I'm over the limit, and I'm trying to get them on the show page, the Nicole Sandler Show, but they're up on my personal page, and I think it's public, so you can go look if you want to see them. All right, moving right along, there are problems in Ohio, as Senator Brown and I were just discussing, and that is the Secretary of State of the state of Ohio is spending taxpayers' dollars to try to take this case to the Supreme Court because he doesn't want citizens to be able to vote. It's mind-boggling. It's very Orwellian, actually. And joining us now to bring us up to date on whether the latest is Ari Berman from The Nation. Somebody, Ari, we've got to stop meeting like this. Because we've been talking about the attempts to suppress the vote, most recently in Pennsylvania, and the suppressors lost there, at least for now anyway, right?
Yeah, hey, Nicole, I know. I feel like we've been talking about this for a year and a half now. They did lose in Pennsylvania because the voter ID law in that state is on hold, essentially. The judge didn't strike the law, but what he said is that poll workers can ask people for the government-issued ID that the state mandated, but it's not mandatory for voters to show it. So you don't have to actually show ID, and the 2012 election in Pennsylvania will be like all the other elections in state's history. The Ohio situation is very confusing because what happened is the legislature originally passed these really severe limits on early voting that was so unpopular that the legislature there repealed their own law, but they kept a ban on 3 days of early voting except for members of the military. The Obama campaign challenged that in court, saying it makes no sense to have early voting 3 days before the election for members of the military, but not all the other voters in the state. And two different courts agreed, and they said, yes, there should be early voting 3 days before the election, and the state and county should figure out how to implement it. And then what Secretary of State John Husted did is he is now appealing that ruling to the Supreme Court. So we're essentially less than 4 weeks out from the election,
right,
and voters don't know if they're going to be able to vote early 3 days before the election. They already can't vote on nights or weekends during the existing days of early voting prior to the election because Husted limited it to during the day when it's least convenient for people to vote. So Ohio's certainly not making it as easy as possible for voters to cast a ballot this time.
And again, I know it's a small aspect, but an aspect with it which, you know, most who are telling the story are not dealing with, and that is the fact that he's spending a lot of taxpayer dollars to keep citizens from voting. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, that's the whole thing with all of these laws.
Right. I mean,
states are spending $5 to $6 million to implement voter ID laws when there's no fraud to justify the laws. But nonetheless, they're spending all this money to make it harder for people to vote, sometimes in good faith, I think often and not. But the reality is for a party that's supposed to be about small government and judicious use of taxpayer dollars, they're wasting a lot of money and they're adding a whole number of useless bureaucratic requirements that are only going to have the impact of making it harder for people to cast a ballot.
Right. So here we are, as you mentioned, it's 3 weeks and 5 days, I think, until Election Day. And when will we know if the Supreme Court is even going to hear this case?
Well, they obviously have to act quickly. The way it works is that each justice has a jurisdiction, and the jurisdiction of the Sixth Circuit Court, which is the one that ruled on early voting, is Elena Kagan's jurisdiction. And so basically she can decide if she wants to hear the case, if she wants to make a decision herself, or she wants to give it to the whole court.
Really?
The feeling is she'll give it to the whole court. But they'd have to rule very, very quickly here.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, because it may be, what, 25 days till Election Day, but the weekend, the 3 days before that, takes 3 days off, and they have to get things in place. This is really despicable. And add to that the fact that the Republican Party lied about what the Obama administration was trying to do here, which was to keep these 3 days of early voting available to everybody in Ohio. And in fact, what the Republicans accused them of doing was discriminating against active military so that to make it so that they couldn't vote during this 3-day period leading up to Election Day. It is, have you ever seen anything like this?
Well, it was such an absurd accusation because Obama wasn't trying to take rights away from military voters. He was trying to give all voters the same rights, which is the exact principle of democracy, I might add, that our troops fight and die for overseas. And so it really was a despicable accusation. Really, if you want to look now, the only people that are trying to suppress the rights of military voters are the Republicans who refuse to implement these 3 days of early voting, because Houston should have just said, okay, the courts have spoken, I'm going to do this. Instead, he's fighting it. What's happening in the meantime is local boards of election are still voting on whether or not to hold these early voting hours. And we're seeing a trend here, which is a trend we saw earlier this year, which is Democrats are voting for expanded early voting hours. Republicans are voting against expanded early voting hours. The commissions are deadlocking, and then it's up to Husted to break the tie. And what Husted did earlier with early voting before the 3 days before the election was to say, we're only going to have early voting during the day, not on nights, not on weekends, when it's most convenient for people to vote.
Of course.
So now he could step in again. Even if he loses before the Supreme Court, he could step in again and he could say, actually, I'm going to limit the early voting hours during this period of time as well.
Because they do not want you to vote.
Yeah. I mean, that's the key. You really kind of wonder here what his end goal is.
It is stunning. And then, we can't forget the two election supervisors, I guess, who said they're going to allow early voting in their precincts or whatever it was. And they were unceremoniously fired for doing that. It is just mind-boggling. And this should be all people need to realize is they don't want you to vote. Obviously, it should make you even more bound and determined to vote. Ari Berman, find him at The Nation at herdingdonkeys.com. Thank you so much, Ari.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Me too. I'm Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
All right. Don't forget. Yes, we'll be right back with more of your calls. The rest of the time is yours. Call in, okay? Sing it, Bruce. Yeah, that song has become one of the theme songs of the Obama campaign. We take care of our own, drawing a real parallel between what the Democrats stand for and what the Republicans stand for. And maybe the Democrats don't take care of our own enough, but certainly compared to the Republicans, wow, it's a night and day. All right, I'm Nicole Sandler, in for Tom Hartman, and some of you have been holding for a long, long time, so let's get to it. Gene in Malta, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Thank you so much for holding. Sorry to keep you so long.
Okay, thanks. What I originally called about is minority rule, which means, which has nothing to do with race, but it has to do with requiring 60% majority in, well, say, the Senate, mm-hmm. or a 60% majority proposed by the Illinois Congress in a constitutional amendment to do anything for, well, in Illinois, that would be to do anything about pensions for public employees.
Okay.
And it's a real mess. And what it really says is we officially do not trust the people. And the other facet of that is voter suppression. And, you know, Rick Scott has basically, you know, thumbed his nose at Justice Department and said, we're going to knock off 180,000 illegal aliens.
Right. You're talking about, by the way, here in Florida, where I live, where I'm broadcasting from today, Rick Scott, our governor, our criminal in the governor's mansion, the guy who ran a company that was guilty of the biggest Medicare fraud in history. Yeah. And he's done these illegal voter purges. But, yeah, go on. For those who didn't know who Rick Scott was, I wanted to put that in.
So it basically means that why stop at 60%, which Illinois wants or which the Senate wants? Why we have if you want to get something done and you're a worker, you have to have a 99% majority of the vote to do something.
Well, you know, because, that 60 number, let's just talk about the U.S. Senate for a moment, because I'm not really familiar with what's going on in Illinois specifically. But the U.S. Senate, the filibuster rule, you know, the filibuster doesn't appear anywhere in the Constitution. This is a rule that was put in later, after the Constitution and the government was formed. And now this Republican Party is abusing the filibuster rule, where they're using it on every single piece of legislation that is put forth. And, you know, you'll have someone like Scott Brown. By the way, I neglected to talk about the fact that Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren had their third debate last night. But Scott Brown, you know, he talks about, well, you know, I'm the most bipartisan or second most bipartisan member of the Senate. What he didn't say is that he votes with the Republicans deny cloture. So on the filibuster to keep most bills from coming to a vote. Now, if the Democrats keep control of the Senate, they can do what they didn't do at the beginning of the 112th session of Congress, which is change the rules. They can change the rules on the first day of the new session of Congress by a simple majority vote. They don't need, they cannot, it cannot be filibustered. They can do it with 51 votes. And I'll tell you what, the VP debate, you know, the vice president is not a very powerful figure, except when it is a 50-50 vote in the Senate, and the vice president, who is the president of the Senate, can cast that deciding vote. They should have done it 2 years ago. If they keep control of the Senate, if the Democrats keep control of the Senate, they need to change that filibuster rule. Oh, okay. Oh, we lost Gene there. I feel bad he held on for so long. But anyway, that's my thought. I really think that they need to change that rule. We'll see what happens. You know, I think the Democrats are gun shy because they know eventually they'll lose control of the Senate too, and then they want to be able to filibuster the Republicans. Well, you can't have it both ways. And if they want to get anything done, can you imagine if they had changed that filibuster rule? How different things would be now. We might have a public option in Obamacare. Wouldn't that be nice? All right, Bill in Fairbury, Illinois, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Bill.
Well, how you doing today, Nicole? What's up?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for waiting for so long.
Oh, trust me, you were worth the wait. By the way, you look much better than Tom, but let's get to the issues here. One of the things I was talking about was instant voter runoff. One thing I'm a little pervaded by, a lot of you and Tom both talk about the fact that, you know, the influx of third-party candidates, and that we live in a safe state, we should, you know, go ahead and vote for them. But if not, then we should vote for Obama. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
here?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Look, I'm in Florida, and there are a lot of things about Obama I'm not thrilled with. But I know that it's either going to be Barack Obama or Mitt Romney who wins this election. And in a state like Florida, in a state like Ohio or Pennsylvania or Virginia or Colorado, you can't waste the vote. And it would be a wasted vote.
Well, I understand that, and I know exactly what you're saying. But, you know, why don't we do something locally? Why don't we have people, and this is something that me and a friend of mine are talking about, why don't we try to get instant voter runoff on the ballot? Why don't we do things to try to, you know, change the presidential debate committee, this bogus 15% rule, so that we can get these third-party voices out there? I mean, I think that's the only way we're going to truly have change. If not, I think we're just going to be spinning our wheels for, you know, from now until eternity. I know what you're saying. I don't like Mitt Romney, and I don't like Paul Ryan. I hope he gets his butt handed to him tonight.
Me
but
too.
Nonetheless, you know, I'm 45 years old. I've been watching this type of thing for years now. You know, I mean, what's your take on this?
Here's what I think. If by some weird, you know, lightning strike twist of fate, Jill Stein wins, think about what happens come January 20th, because she's got there is no Green Party infrastructure in Congress. Right now, President Obama has a really tough time getting anything through, and he's got almost half of the caucus in both houses, you know, working with him, right?
Exactly.
Can you imagine Jill Stein? You got a Green Party president. Then all of a sudden, you're going to have a president with no power base in either house of Congress. What the Green Party needs to do is be active 365 days a year, every year, not just in a presidential year. And they need to look, I say this all the time on my show. What they need to do is starting November 7th, because right now we're all entrenched in this election. November 7th, you get in every county and every city and every municipality and get Green Party candidates into local office and state office, and you build the party from the ground up. You can't build a major party from the top down. And so I think they're shooting too high. You really want to make a change, then you start this party. You get entrenched in the local level and you work your way up. And who knows, maybe in a generation we could have a viable third party, but we don't have it now.
And you know what? I'm going to tell you one thing, honestly. I agree with what you said, and I respect what you said. And I can't say it anymore. I think it has to start at the local level. Yeah. But I think until this somehow has to get out by people, somehow people in our local municipalities need to try to get this initiative on the ballot with this, the instant voter runoff.
I agree with you 100%, because then
I'm talking out of frustration at the same time, I could cast a protest vote.
I could say Jill Stein, all right, because I agree with her. I'm most closely aligned with her on the issues. But, and then when she doesn't get in, it goes to my second choice, which would be Barack Obama. Then I'm casting a protest vote. But my vote will not count towards Mitt Romney winning the presidency.
Exactly.
You know? Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And in fact, I want to go to Warren in Kirkland, Washington, listening on AM 1090. And I think the point you want to make is the other point that I make, but I'll let you say it.
Yeah, I just basically wanted to hi, Nicole, sorry.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about the third party and how Tom usually always says, take over the party from within, like the Tea Party took over in 2010.
Yep. And so, you know,
with the Congressional Progressive Caucus is the way to do it. I mean,
exactly.
Just look up the peoplesbudget.org and look at the budget they're proposing.
It makes sense. And we could move the Democratic Party to the left. You know what? Greens, get involved with the Democratic Party. This is already a viable national party. And right now it controls the administration. Right. And move the party to the left. I'll tell you, during this primary season, it was pretty disappointing that we had some great progressive candidates who didn't win. But I'll tell you what, there are a lot of really good progressives who are still in the race, who could win on November 7th. And no, come November 7th, we won't have a progressive majority in the House. But you know what? That progressive caucus can certainly be a lot stronger.
It is the largest caucus in Congress. So,
more
and more we get in, you know, the stronger and stronger it gets until we get to that, you know, what is it, 216, 217 vote
mark
where things can get passed.
Right. And I'll tell you, one thing the Republicans do well is they look at the big picture. Look, Paul Weyrich, that very classic clip, the goo-goo syndrome, the good government syndrome. We don't want good government. We don't want people to vote. You know, that was three decades ago. They play the long game. We want instant gratification. Look, I'm right there with you. I want it, and I want it yesterday. But we got to look at the big picture. We need to realize it takes time to build a movement. You know, unfortunately, the Occupy movement was not the left's answer to the Tea Party, because a lot of the people in the Occupy movement are like, I'm not playing the game. I don't want to get involved in an election. Well, that's, you know, in my view, the bad part of Occupy is they could have made a difference. They could have pushed the Democratic Party to the left, but too many people are just, I don't know, too ideological and won't even go there. But we can make we can move the Democratic Party to the left if we elect real progressives to both houses of Congress. So that's our challenge. Thanks so much for the call, Warren. I appreciate it. All right, we got one more segment. Don't go away. Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Now, tomorrow is Anything Goes Friday, so get your calls ready for tomorrow, because we're going to just blast through those calls, all right? Don't go away.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Oh, man, time flies when you're having fun. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman. I will be back tomorrow, and so we can do our little recap of the debate. Tom will be back on Monday. Big thanks once again to Tom's great staff, Sean Taylor, the producer of the show, Shane Farnan on the controls back in D.C., Danielle, you know, I've known Danielle for a few years now and don't know how to pronounce her last name. Gidre? Is that how we say? Gilday. Okay, Gilday. I should know that. And Jim Javinsky, who I neglected to mention yesterday, who does all the video work. I got to tell you, as I said, I'm so used to radio. I'm not a TV person. And even though I have like a Ustream feed of my show, it's just weird being on TV. So thanks for bearing with my mug on Free Speech TV. All right, let's get back to the phones and talk to Paul from Northville, Michigan, who is watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Nicole, you're doing a great job.
Thank you so much. What's
up? First, I want to say that Scott Brown claiming to be the second most bipartisan Republican is like claiming to be the second tallest midget.
I guess. I mean, look, there are some, and I guess when he was, I asked when he said that, he kept saying that the last time, who was first? Was it Susan Collins or Olympia Snow? And I'm sorry, they're both a little more bipartisan than he is.
Yeah, but you know. Okay. Yeah, they are, actually.
Yeah, they are. Although Olympia Snow is not going to be there anymore. I'm sorry.
It's also like claiming to be the second smartest guy in your remedial learning class.
I know. I'll tell you what got me even worse than that. And I didn't see the debate last night just because I was so busy. I left here yesterday after doing Tom's show, and my daughter had a softball game. It was just a very long day, so I didn't get to see last night's debate. Though I will watch it on video at some point, I'm sure, although they have one more still to come. You know, what got me on the last debate was Scott Brown, who kept calling himself an independent. And I'm screaming at the TV, you're not an independent. You are a Republican. There's nothing independent about him. He has that giant R next to his name, and I hope people don't listen to the lies.
Well, the fact that he's a Republican means he's a really good liar, so, you know, that's why he did that.
That's why he could say he's an independent.
Yeah.
All right.
But I also wanted to point out that the Republicans are not pro-life. They only say they are. You know, the only life they care about is a fetus.
Exactly.
Once it's born and becomes a real person, then they don't care about it anymore.
No, they're love the fetus, hate the child.
They're always cutting school lunch programs.
I know.
And then when kids turn 18, they can't wait to send them to a war to be killed. So they're really pro-death, you know. They're not pro-life at all.
Well, that's why I say the Republican motto should be love the fetus, hate the child. They don't give a damn about you once you're born. You can starve to death for all they care as long as you, you know, pop out of the mother's uterus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Once you're alive and breathing on your own, then they don't care about you.
Yeah, and I hope women realize that all Republicans want to take away their rights. They want to take away their right to choose, you know, either birth control or abortion.
Yeah.
They want to take away women's right to equal pay for equal work. And now they're trying to take away women's votes and men's votes, you know. So
it is stunning. I don't know how any woman, anybody with a uterus, could vote Republican this year. I just don't.
Never focuses on the facts, you know. They just focus on who's ahead and, you know, whatever. So
I hear you, Paul. Thank you for the call. I really appreciate it. Randy in Linwood, Washington, listening on AM 1090. Hi.
Hi. You know, I was born into our social service system with a vision impediment. If you have a disability, you have no rights.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, there are, but you do have rights right now. They want to take those rights away from you.
Well, human rights in this country is only for those who can afford them.
Do you not get, if you were born vision impaired, did you not get disability payments or anything?
I'm getting them now, but no, I was born into our so-called social service system run by Nazi criminals.
I have no idea what you're trying to say.
Well, basically, social workers are sociopaths, kind of like Mitt Romney. I mean, they don't care about people.
Aren't you painting everybody with a very broad brush? I caution against overgeneralizing. I'm sure there are some very good social workers out there. I'm sure there's also a lot of people who fall through the cracks.
Yeah, that's very true. But a lot of the agencies don't do anything.
Okay. So what should we do? Just disband them all? Because that's the alternative.
Well, for instance, the Obamacare, 80% of what goes into the insurance companies has to be paid out in benefits,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Why not make the same true for the so-called charities and social works, social programs?
It should be that way. It really should. In fact, it should be more than 80%. My biggest problem with the fact that Obamacare doesn't have a public option is if we had Medicare for all with Medicare, I think their overhead is 3%. So actually 97% of the money in Medicare goes to actually providing services for people. That's the way it should be. I thank you for the call, Randy. I know you were trying to make a point and I just wasn't getting it. But I appreciate you trying. I always called, I used to say that the for-profit health insurance industry is government-sanctioned extortion. And I really believe that. You know, I have insurance. I have it through a part-time job that I have. And basically, the money I make goes to pay the premium so that I can have insurance. Because I have a pre-existing condition, I had a malignant melanoma about 4 years ago, 5 years ago now. So I'm a cancer survivor, and I'm pretty much uninsurable. And so, it costs, it's over $1,000 a month. And a $2,000 deductible before the insurance company pays a dime. And, you know, I can get medications at a lower cost because I have insurance. But if I didn't pay that extortion, I'd be charged a fortune more. It is government-sanctioned extortion. It would be nice if we could have Medicare for all. That's what we need to work towards. Right? And I think the only way we'll get there is with Obama and a progressive Congress pushing him that way. Make sense? All right. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com. Back for Tom tomorrow on Anything Goes Friday. So I look forward to talking with you then. Follow me on Twitter, too, at Nicole Sandler, and find me at RadioOrNot.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for
listening
talking.
To Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.